And welcome to another episode. Another day has dawned and it's another episode on the Shut Up and Ride podcast, sponsored by the brilliant Charles Owen, who protects all our heads. And I've got no Simi today, but I do have a Benji. How are you doing, Benji?
I'm very good, thank you. And speaking of Charles Owen, I had my first test drive for my incredible competition winning hat at the weekend. And anybody who wants to see that, you can check out Shut Up and Ride socials or mine. And I think it looked rather marvellous. But yeah, I'm very, very good. If you hear any screaming children in the background, that's from me. And they're not even my children.
Yeah.
My child is away with George at her mum's.
Yeah. So you've replaced your own child with other people's children. Excellent.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Just need children in my life now. Yeah.
If you're meant to get rid of children, you don't replace them with other people's. That's not how parenting works. If your child is out of it, you do not, like, it's when people go to me, do you want to hold this baby? I'm like, if I'm not holding my own child, there's absolutely no part of me that wants to hold someone else's. But we may not have Simi, but I'm very excited because we have a proper celebrity on the pod. This lady is, I don't even know how to describe you, but we will welcome you to the pod and then we will tell the listeners all about you. It is the brilliant barrel racing motivational speaker, like celeb American, amazing. Our first person from stateside, Amberly Snyder, is on the podcast and I'm very excited to welcome you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. I didn't know I'm the first one, first American on the podcast. That's actually kind of impressive. I'm going to add that to the resume.
Yes, please do. And I love your accent already. It's just like you couldn't sound more like you were a horse riding American as if you tried. Like, I love it. It's the coolest accent ever. I just sound like Mary Poppins. I have no coolness to my accent at all. Ben's laughing because he knows it's true.
I was already thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to be the best podcast ever. And I hope I understand every word you guys say.
I was thinking more, but Jenny, Mary Poppins is always so polite and nice to people. I mean, what?
Okay, this is one of the reasons, Amberly, I had to create this podcast, because I couldn't keep the nice person. Like, when obviously I'm working at big events and I interview riders, you have to be like the Olympics and things. You have to be very grown up and serious. And how did your horse go? Yes, thank you very much. So I had to create this so my actual, like, alter ego could come out and I could actually be my real self. And we're not always the most polite, I would say. But I did warn you about this before you came on and you were like, yeah, I'm all down for it.
You did. I'm prepared. I'm ready.
Right. So I'm going to try and explain a little bit about you, but there's so many things that you do that I will probably miss stuff out. You are a barrel racer, which... this is that how Ben feels all the time, because I know so little about barrel racing and Ben knows so little about dressage, eventing and show jumping. So I now know how he feels. So I'm very much looking forward to getting into that. You had an accident and you are now in a wheelchair, but you still barrel race, and you are a motivational speaker. You travel the world just being completely awesome, still on horses as well. And you were in Yellowstone, which, by the way, is my favorite show. And I'm actually a little bit starstruck. I'm not normally stumbling over my words this much, but I've seen you in Yellowstone and I'm like proper starstruck. Ben's laughing his head off because he knows how much I love Yellowstone.
I'm also just thinking, where do we start? Amberly, you tell us, we're going to talk about you, your life, your journey. Where do you want to start this?
Well, I mean, I can give like a little background. So I guess we can give like kind of my life in a nutshell, and then we'll go from there.
Absolutely.
Go for it. Yes. Tell us about you.
Okay. Well, I want to start with, so I didn't actually come from a horse family. So I think that's one of the, I would say, different things about me, because I feel like a lot of people in the horse industry, you know, it's been passed down, whether, you know, parents, grandparents, somebody. And in my family, my dad was a Major League Baseball player. My mom was a cheerleader. She did have a horse when she was younger.
Wait. Yeah. We're just brushing past that. My dad was a Major League Baseball player. Just nothing. Easy.
Just in the nutshell, right? Like, that's where I came from.
That is pretty cool.
I'm sorry. I'm jumping in straight away. I know we've not even got to the most incredible parts of your life. We've got as far as you grew up not in a horsey family.
No, you got as far as she was born, Ben.
Yeah, I got as far as she was born.
You were born. That was amazing.
Do you think I know our audience don't even know all of the things that are going to happen in your life yet, but up till now. But do you think that being surrounded by parents that were that driven and motivated and achieved the things that they achieved is something that's massively helped you?
Yeah, 100%. I believe, I tell people I had the perfect combination of parents because my dad, being a Major League Baseball player, right? He played for 8.5 years in the big leagues. He knew what it took to be the best. And so he expected that from his children from, I swear, the day we were born. So I feel like I have that perspective of somebody who expected us to be a high level of whatever we did. It didn't matter what we did. We just needed to do it at a high level and we needed to do it and be the best at it. So he taught us that. And then my mom was very good at teaching us that even if we didn't win, we had value. So I feel like I had this perfect combination of, I want you to be the best, but even if you aren't the best that day, you know, that doesn't decide who you are and the value that you have. And so I had like this perfect combination growing up. I mean, when I was 3 years old, and I would say us four older, there's six kids in my family, but the four oldest, at 3 years old, we had to know what we wanted to do for the rest of our lives. And we pretty well stuck to it. Like that was what we did, right? My brothers took after my dad in baseball, and they are just now, the second one did officially retire last year. So, but they're still coaching. They're still involved. My older sister was a gymnast. She's now a coach. I mean, it was like we had this expectation to be good and be decisive. And then we needed to work hard at doing that.
Wow. I couldn't even clean my teeth at three, let alone knew what I wanted to be for the rest of my life. That is amazing. That is, when did you decide then that barrel racing horses, well, I suppose horses, and then how did barrel racing come about?
So I would say I got to start doing riding lessons when I was three in California. My mom found a place that would actually take a three-year-old. So that was kind of a tricky part too. Is people want to take a three-year-old to teach them riding lessons. Like they don't feel like you're old enough yet to be doing that. But I found a place, or they found a place at three, and I did ride for a year. And then I took a little bit of time off because I was so mad that my legs didn't go past the saddle pad that I couldn't actually place to go faster. So then I went and did dance for a minute and karate for a minute. And then when my legs grew, I was able to come back and I got a pony so that I could get my legs a little farther down and be able to get that pony to go the speed I wanted.
Did you learn Western riding first, or do you learn English style of riding? How does that work when you're 3 years old?
So I did. The place we went, it wasn't a barrel racing place at all. It was just horsemanship. And so we rode Western. Yeah. And we did a little bit of showing and whatnot. I didn't actually start barrel racing until we moved to Utah when I was seven. And that was also when I rode English. So I did both when we moved to Utah. I wanted to do the English side. I love jumping. I miss jumping a lot. And so I did the 3-day eventing. I did hunter jumping. We did all of that as well when I got to Utah. When I got to Utah when I was seven. But in California, it was just like Western pleasure, horsemanship. Learn how to sit your horse correct, which I'm glad I did, because I feel like people skip that, right? Like they want to right to a discipline, and you don't spend enough time actually learning how to ride a horse and read a horse and work with a horse. And so I'm glad I started there.
My gosh. And then when did you, because obviously I've watched your Netflix movie, forgot to drop that in our intro. You've actually got a movie about your life. No one's ever going to make a movie about my life. Like it's never going to happen.
I don't know. You could become a serial killer or something. Then you might.
Yeah, that could happen. Ben might start with you. He never replies to his WhatsApp, Zambly. It drives me mad. But when in the film your mum, the person playing your mum, talks about your natural talent and natural ability, and I bang on about this a lot. I think some people are natural horsemen and can read a horse and see a horse and just understand horses. I don't think everybody has that ability. And I'm guessing that was something that they spotted in you, that you just seem to have a way with horses and you understand them. At what kind of age did people go, yeah, she's pretty good?
You know, I would tell you at 5 years old, my coach, the person that was teaching me, was already telling me that I needed to have, it was very important to have quiet hands. I don't think at 5 years old you have that conversation with very many people. And the way I interpreted it, I got in the car after that lesson. I do not remember this, but I got in the car after this lesson and I told my mom, my hands are so loud. I don't know how to make my hands be not so loud. And my mom is like, what are you even talking about? So she had to call the gal that gave me lessons. And she's like, I told her she needed to have quiet hands. I don't know why she took that her hands are loud. They're not loud. But that was just how I interpreted that as a 5-year-old getting taught this is the correct horsemanship. And that was really, I mean, I was expected. The gal that taught me how to ride was not gentle in her teaching. I mean, she was not used to teaching children. So she didn't teach me like a child. She taught me like I should be a grown up.
Yeah. See, this is where I have to say, Jenny, I am slightly the other way with it. I don't believe that anybody is talented at anything.
Yeah, we argue about this a lot.
I hate being called talented. It really annoys me. Because
what would you rather be called?
Well, I think it's handsome. I think people can be really either lucky or through coincidence have things that happen in their life and around them in their life that put them in a situation to like excel. But I wouldn't call that talent because it's not the person, it's the world around them. So like for me growing up with my family the way it was, I've talked about it loads on here before, how that set me up for what I was doing. But then I would say like, from what I've heard from your story so far, you had the perfect combination with your parents, you know, the achievements that they'd had, and then how they sort of, your dad put that fire underneath all of his children to be like, come on, I achieved, I want you to achieve as well. And then a mother that taught you to then be compassionate with yourself when you weren't. Then you come across this riding instructor who luckily didn't just put you on a trail pony and say, kick around the outside of the arena. Instead, you know, because if you'd had that teacher, maybe you wouldn't be where you are now. Well, you see what I'm saying? Like
it's a combination, right? Because I think in order to be truly successful, like truly successful, there has to be something inside of you that has that, like the passion for it. I don't know. I talk to people when I go to speaking and I tell people there are things in life that make you happy, right? So I always say for me, that's like Disney and sugar and Harry Potter, right? Like those are the things that like make me happy. And then there are things in the world that make your heart happy. That is where you will truly excel in the world, right? Is when you find something that does make your heart happy. So for me, I would tell you horses did that from the beginning. And so there was that drawn to them, that whether we want to call it talent, we want to call it the blood, it's in your blood, whatever we want to say, right? Like that made horses a part of me. And then how lucky am I that I had such a background and such a force that created me to get to not only do it, but then be good at it.
Yeah, I do think there is something in people, whether it's talent or whatever it is. And you have that, Ben. Not everyone will spend the hours that you spend training horses to run round you with no tack on and do all the stuff that you get them to do.
I think that's more like vaguely undiagnosed ADHD or autism in me. My little hyper-focused brain. I don't need change.
It's talent, though, because you have to be able to hone in on that ability that someone else is not going to. Shoot, I tried to play softball, right? My dad being a baseball player, I thought, you know, I could be a softball player. At 10 years old, I played one season. My dad told me to stick to rodeo. I was not talented. I was not going to be good at that sport. So he was like, yeah, don't do that. Like, that's not for you.
Yeah. My mom is your dad. My mum is the person who I would do something in a performance, because I do like in the same way that you guys have, like, you know, like the trick riders and stuff at the rodeo. That's kind of what I do, like, but with liberty horses and stuff. And I'll work on a piece for an act for ages and then finally get it out at a show. And my mum will come up to me afterwards and be like, yeah, that was not good. Don't do that again. And you're like, oh,
nailed
it. But at the same time, you need those people in your life, because then when they give you praise, it means something, because they're not just saying everything is great. Like, right, so we keep getting sidetracked. So you're riding, you found your passion for it and your talent for it. When did you discover barrel racing?
So my family decides to move from California to Utah when I'm 7, and I told my dad I would only move if he bought me a Palomino barrel horse when we got there. And thank goodness.
Very specific. I like it.
That is what I want. And at 7 years old, I felt like I had this bargaining power. Like I wasn't going to move. Like, sorry, I won't move with the family unless you get me this when we get there. And you know what? My dad fed the fire because he agreed. And he got me a Palomino barrel horse when we got to Utah. So that's where I actually started competing.
So, but when, and was it just something that you were interested in because you'd seen it and stuff then? Because to ask for a barrel horse,
Yeah, to do that. I mean, my mom had wanted to barrel race when she was little, but she didn't have the opportunity. So I feel like she influenced that as far as, you know, we would trace the barrel pattern with a pen and pencil, you know, on a paper over and over and over, or, you know, we would talk about barrel racing or horses. And so I think, you know, she had wanted that opportunity. And so she felt like when she saw I had the interest in horses, that there was a chance I could like it. And I did.
Okay. And for those at the back who don't know, right, barrel racing, I've seen it on your show and I've seen it on like shows, but what are the actual rules around it? Is it always the same pattern? I get kind of like show jumping, barrel down bad, barrel up good at the end of the round, and go as fast as humanly possible seems to be the other rule. What are the other intricacies to it? Because that's basically what I was getting from it.
Yeah, I feel like the basic way to explain it is there's obviously going to be three barrels in the arena and they're going to be at different measurements. And that's going to depend on what size the arena is. So it is always tricky when like, you know, what's my favorite or what's my fastest time? And I'll tell you, well, that depends on the size of the arena, right? Because it's going to depend on the size of the pattern. Now they have a standard pattern. They have a standard set. And that is where you can really measure across the world, even, you know, what's going to be the fastest time on a standard set. So that would be a certain distance between the barrels as well as to the timer. And then they're going to have different, you know, those measurements are going to change depending on the arena. You can either start going to the right barrel or the left barrel first. And then.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you can pick. So if you want to make a right-handed turn first, you want to turn to the right barrel first, then you will make two lefts after that. If you want to go to the left barrel first, then you'll make two right-hand turns after that. So you can break up the pattern, right? If you try to do something besides that, and then it'll just...
So from a strategy point of view then, do you want to try and do your horse's worst turn first? So then you've got your bet, because you're going to have a good side and a bad side.
That is exactly what I was just thinking.
Yes. So that is something that is talked about a lot with different trainers across the board. Like, you know, how do you pick what direction you want to send their horse? Because they're going to have a good side and they're going to have a not as good side. So
yeah,
I've had horses that I trained a certain direction and then I switched them for that reason. They were more confident one direction or the other. Some people just only train right-handed horses. Like that is what they're comfortable with. That's what they're going to train. Whether they're not the greatest there, they might end up selling them to someone else who could maybe switch them, but that's what they want to train. I think the majority of the time I train them right. I train power left, which we'll get into who power is. And strictly for the reason I wanted to train a left-handed horse.
Can I just ask a question? When you say a right-handed horse or a left-handed horse, does that go off the first turn or the second two turns?
The first turn. So the first turn is gonna be if you're a lefty or a righty. And okay, yeah.
Is that where you're getting your power?
I mean, I don't know why they pick that, I guess, but that's just if you're, you know, if you say I have a left horse, like a left-handed horse or a lefty, that's going to be because they go to the left barrel first.
Barrel first.
So some people just decide what they want to train there. And I mean, my horse that I run the most now, I trained him left for the reason that it was after my accident and I ride better with my left hand, but realized about a year into his training that he was actually going to be more successful going to the right. So then I was able to switch him over and switch him right.
When you're actually like schooling and training at home, do you have to be aware of keeping them kind of level sided?
You definitely want them equal on both sides, right? You want them to be able to turn equally as strong because with the turns that they're doing, I mean, it's using so many muscles. You're running a horse as fast as you can possibly get them and then expecting them to sit and turn on a dime and then run as fast as they can to the next one and sit and turn. So, I mean, for injury's sake, you want them to be as strong and sound as possible throughout their whole body. But you do some people who, if they don't pay attention to that, you know, they have like a favorite side to lope their horse. I have seen when I've taught clinics, a horse that I'm like, okay, you need to go home and you don't get to lope to the right anymore. Like you need to go because your horse acts like it doesn't even know how to move that direction because you don't like it. Of course it's rough. You never make them do it. Yeah. And so you can see that happen.
Yeah, and I train, I teach. I haven't done for a few years now, but I always used to say, people were like, oh, they're so stiff to the left. I'm like, well, you get on and you're straight away on the right rein. You're so right-handed. You're spending 70% of your training session on the right. So then when you go left, their muscles aren't used to it. So then when you ride them the next time, they've got like delayed onset muscle soreness because you've worked them on muscles they're not strong enough. And people are so shocked by this, but you wouldn't. I wouldn't go to the gym and lift weights with one hand.
Right.
But yet people don't seem to do it with horses. And I'm like, I just don't get it. Why do you not think like this?
Well, 100%. I mean, if that's the exact way to think about it. If you went to the gym and you're like, I'm only going to lift with my right hand. That's it. Because that's the hand I think I want to be stronger with. Well, my heavens, that's not going to work out very good.
Fun fact, though, I have to say, when I was younger, because I used to ride one-handed all of the time and I was a scrawny little thing. I had a bigger left arm than I had a bigger and a smaller right arm. So I used to do more with my right arm at the gym to try and make it the same size.
See, you were aware. You were aware and trying to be people so that you weren't, you know, an unequal scrawny kid. You could be
Yeah, exactly. I can be a balanced out scrawny kid.
Yeah,
and also, I just feel like I want to say to our listeners as well, because barrel racing horses are jacked. They are so, I mean, they look insane.
You should be able to utilize all of those muscles in their body. They don't look racy. And sometimes you will, you know, sometimes you'll see a barrel horse that is bred that way or just, I mean, even Power, my main horse was main horse. He's a little more racy looking. He did get run on the track. He is still a quarter horse, but he's just been kind of a hard keeper his whole life. So you look at him compared to the other three I have in my barn, and you're like, okay, yeah, you would almost think he wasn't even a quarter horse, but he is. But the majority of barrel horses, I mean, they are, yeah, a pretty barrel horse is going to be very muscly.
What age do they? So for me, an Eventer at 10 is when you're kind of thinking, that would be when, if you get them to a 5-star at 10, you've done well. Normally like 11, Grand Prix horses in dressage, 10 is still quite young. What age is like peak barrel racing? Like how long does it take them to get to the top of their game?
See, now this is something that is discussed in our barrel horse world a lot because our horses.
Oh, you did serious voice.
Because our horses, we expect them to peak their maturity year. So that's going to be 4 and 5. So
that's
it's like
young.
You, the most money your barrel horse is going to make is its maturity here, which they can either do at 4 or at 5. You can pick, and then they will have a couple years after that that are called their derby years. And then they're just an open horse, and open horses just don't make that much money. And yet technically that's when they're actually kind of solid and mentally prepared to be there and handle all the situations. But I mean, I'm even thinking like I have Legacy, my main horse that I run now, he's 17. And I'm like, I mean, he might only have a couple years left. Where in your world, 17, you're like, wow, they're really awesome in their career. And they still have however many years left.
Yeah.
And it's just such a different mentality, which I think is, it's a lot of pressure, you know, as a trainer that you have to have this horse be at the top of their game at 4 or 5 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, I think
that's more like racehorses. Sorry, Ben.
No, I was just going to say definitely, like I've been lucky enough to start spending a bit more time over in the States the last couple of years. And the first time I was out there and I was watching someone school a horse on the night, a little reining, little sorrel reining horse. And I was like, that looks incredible. How old is that horse? And they're like, oh, it's 3. And I was like, oh, that's a lot for like, how has it been able to be ridden for long enough at this age to even learn all of that?
Well, and that is kind of part of it, right? Is that we put a lot of, I mean, same as racehorses, right? They have so much pressure so young.
Yeah. And not even just physically. I think anyone can see the physical sort of strain of high level competition. And just to make it clear, at no point are we saying that it's barrel racing or reining. It's or racing, it's the same in eventing or dressage. You want to do something at the top level, it's hard. It's physically hard. But then there's also that mental hardness that I don't think people always like comprehend as well. Like we already made a joke at the start, Amberly, of you saying that who tells a 5-year-old to have quieter hands? Because like even you getting back in the car at 5 years old and being like, I've got really loud hands, because it played on your mind because you were too young to really take education like that.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing that's going on with these horses. We're throwing questions at them, not only to go through the schooling and learn everything they need to learn, but then to cope with the amount of travel, the amount, like the audiences, the music. It's just a lot. It's a lot to cram into.
It is a lot. And you'll see horses who are super talented physically that can't handle it mentally. And they can't, you know, like they can't, whether it's the atmosphere, the travel, the pressure, any of that. There are some horses that you'll see that might make one or two or three nice runs to start their futurity year. And then they're blown up and they just like, that's it. That's the end of their career because they just mentally couldn't handle the pressure.
I was just going to say, with a horse like that who won't make it as a barrel racer, what's their career going forwards? Can they, what would their job be if they couldn't take the pressure of kind of competition?
Well, and when I say that, some of them might end up just not being able to do it at their futurity year, right? Like they might need to mature. So those horses they need to take a step back. They might need to be taken a little bit slower, and they could come around, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, right? They're going to be able to come back and do that. If they can't make a barrel horse, I mean, you can look at a rope horse. You can look at a trail horse. You can look at, which is a very expensive trail horse, but you could, I mean, like issues like that you kind of hope you don't have to do. But I mean, I feel like some of them, they just take longer. Right. Like they just don't mature at the speed you want them to. And so unfortunately, that's not the one you're going to make your money on. I mean, you're going to have your time on that one. And truly, the higher end guys are probably going to sell those ones because they don't have their time for them. The big money ranches, those facilities, they're going to sell them to somebody who couldn't maybe afford one of those top winners, but they can afford to spend the time on something that could be nice in 2 or 3 years.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, or everybody who has a barrel racing horse that's not going well could sign up to BAM and turn it into a Liberty horse, just saying.
100%. That's what they all really should be doing. That's what they should be doing.
What's the most difficult part of the barrel racing? So from like an outside perspective, I'd assume it's in the chute before you go in, because that horse is going to know what it's doing and is going to explode. But what have you found the most challenging?
The barrel racing, which I could be similar to these other disciplines, you lose more than you win.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have to be mentally okay with knowing that before you begin. You will lose more often than you win. And you have to find one joy in just being there. Right. And I'm not saying you have to enjoy losing, because I do not enjoy losing. That is not. You don't have to enjoy losing, but you have to enjoy, like, you have to love the horse first, and then you can love the sport second, so that even on those days that you don't win, you know, you still did fill your cup up to be there. And I think that part, it can burn you out. I mean, it can burn you out. Like, I don't know if I'm going to pro rodeo as much this year, because last year it burned me out. My horse performed very well, but it was tougher than it has been. And I'm like, gosh, that wasn't that fun. You know, it wasn't that fun to go out and make a run that I came out and heard my time and felt my run and watched my video and was like, man, we kicked ass. And then you look at the results and I'm like, wow, I sucked. Like, that was bad. that's hard to do. So I think that's really the challenging part, is because, and your horse doesn't know. So if you come out of the arena and you are pissed off and you're upset, now your horse's confidence is going to be affected by that, because 100% your horse's confidence will change between winning and not winning. I have seen that with mine, that when they get on a hot streak, like they know it, like they know they're cool. They go in the arena like they're cool. They run like they're cool. And then they have like these bad runs, a couple ones in a row, and you have felt it, they have felt it. And all of a sudden, you feel inadequate. And I think horses feel the same way.
So we had a very good friend of mine, a girl called Laura Collett, who's a top eventer. She just won team gold at the Olympics and the last Olympics. And she has this amazing horse called London 52 Dan. His name's Dan on the stables. He started winning. And in England, and eventing and show jumping dressage, you come back in for a prize giving. I don't know if you guys do the same. And Dan worked out that when he was in the prize giving, it was all about him. And he loves it. And the more he went in back in and got a rug on and got a sash and saw the crowd clapping him, he was like, yeah, I'm in for this. He knew the applause was for him. And winning bred winning. Do you have the same thing with your horses? Do they go back in and, like, is there a ceremony in the same way?
Sometimes, mostly, not very often, though. Like, at the futurity level, they'll sometimes take them in and do that. But I think it really comes down to that. I think that's why it is so important that it comes down to how you treat your horse when you come out of the arena, because there isn't always like that ceremony that they're going to necessarily know. Sometimes they'll have a victory lap, but most girls don't take their barrel horse back in for that because it's probably going to be a little bit psycho to do that. So you usually end up jumping
a little bit spicy.
Yeah, they usually end up jumping on something else. But I really do think it more even comes down to how you treat your horse. Like when you go back to the trailer, tell your horse they won, you know, and which is sometimes hard because you're disappointed. And you know, your horse feels that. So sometimes it is hard to go back to the trailer. And even though you're really upset on how it went, to have your horse not know that.
Yeah. I love that.
Am I really awful? I have to say this just from my training point of view. But do you, like, especially with them getting hot when they go into the prize givings, do you not think the horse just when it goes in for a prize giving knows, oh no, this is that time where everyone goes mental in the crowd and the music's going to come on really loud. And so it just anticipates the volume and energy of the arena.
I think they know. I don't want you to take that away from me, Benjamin.
I don't know. Just my little, I'm such a little pessimistic, not pessimistic, but just like my little logic brain. Like, because if I had a horse that got really, really hot in a prize giving, I'd be like, I need to work on how this horse copes when the crowd goes like this mental and I want it to stand still.
Well, right. Then that is like in the rodeo world. So sometimes you can draw a performance. So you're going to be there when the crowd is cheering, and sometimes you're going to draw slack, which is like after the performance, there's not anybody there cheering. And there are some horses that really excel in that slack environment where there's not the crowd, there's not the cheering. And then, man, the ones that end up being winners, like they realize when that crowd is cheering and then they love it. They run harder. They try harder. Like, so, but then there are some who I think might be more introverted horses. They're like, I'd rather just come and do my job. Yeah. And my mom just says I did a great job and I go back to the trailer. But some horses are like, heck no, I want people cheering for me and screaming for me and yelling and the announcer and the music. And it is a preference. Like it is, I have both personalities of horses, and then it has to decide what I want to try to enter them in so that they can succeed.
One thing I would say I definitely massively agree with you on is like treat your horse like it won every single time. And like one thing I would add on to that is here's one of Ben's little top tips for training, especially if you're on you don't have your own yard, you're on a livery yard or whatever with other people. Whenever anybody asks you how your horse went, you tell them it was amazing. Never let anybody know. Even if you've just spent half an hour stood in the sand crying because of how bad it's gone.
And the horse is no longer in the arena. You're just still on the sand.
Oh, absolutely. Snot.
They've left you there.
Everything.
Yeah. It's picking up your teeth. Yeah.
That's it. You get back and you tell everybody that horse went so well because people treat good horses better.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm saying they do. We all know that the horse that's really good and everybody knows is really good, the grooms stop and scratch that one more. They make a better job of its stable when they muck it out. Like, I'm not saying that's right, but it's just in us. And so you want everybody to be your horse's friend. So that's a massive thing I agree with you on. If people ask me, I'm always like, yeah, they were amazing. I'll cry privately. They went really, really well.
I like to say, pat the horse, kick the rider. That's one of my favorite phrases.
Oh, I like that. Can we get that on a poster or a t-shirt?
I'll get it on some of our merchandise, our Shut Up and Ride merchandise. We'll send you one, Amber. So I feel like we could, there's so much I still want to talk about, but when did you start winning and thinking, ooh, this is going to be my job? What point in your life were they like, ooh, she's pretty shit hot? And how much did you win? Like, how good were you?
Well, and I feel like I could have been better. I think I don't feel like I won everything to be won. I just could succeed and I just could place. I didn't go win nationals. At least in high school nationals, I didn't go win that. I won the Little Britches World All-Around title my senior year. So that would have been like the highlight of my senior year. But it's, you know, along the way, it was like I won races here or I placed here. I don't know. I wouldn't even say it was like a phenom or anything. There is a girl out there right now who is 11 years old who's already won $1 million. I was not that girl.
I think I've seen her on Instagram. Yeah. I think there's videos, isn't there? Yes. Like she and her legs flap. Like
they
like
do.
No,
they
she do. Goes off.
So I'm like, I wasn't insane. Even doing that. I just felt like I was talented enough to be good at it. And yeah. And I feel like that, I mean, I can still even say that. I can say I am the best professional barrel racer in the United States because I'm the only one. So I can say that. But I would say, like, can I still get better? Absolutely. Like, I mean, I want to do that. I just felt like I was good enough that I could make, I mean, not even a career because my job is really as a motivational speaker, but that I could do this enough to not lose money at it, that I could. Need to do it, you know, that it made sense. So I feel, and that's even how I still feel. I feel like I'm good enough that I can play for free, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And
I think that's most horse businesses around the world, isn't it? I need to be good enough to not lose money. Like that's.
I get to play for free. I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah, that's like my husband, whenever we look for a property, my dream would be have horses at home and have a barn and stuff. And he's like, yeah, and that would, we could make some money out of that, couldn't we? We could have other people's horses. I'm like, oh no, baby. If we have people have their horses on our farm, that will pay for my horses. We're not going to make money out of that. And he's like, oh, so what do I get out of that, having a business on our land? I'm like, you get a happy wife.
That's 100% the answer. Yeah, that's what you get.
You just get less stress and I'm happy. So you obviously this is your career and this is the way you wanted to go with your life. But then as the Netflix movie about your life, tragedy kind of struck and you had a car accident. Can you kind of take us through what happened for anyone who doesn't know your story, if that's all right? And kind of this most life-changing moment in your life and what happened?
So in January of 2010, I was on my way to the stock show in Denver, Colorado. I was going there to just work and I didn't have my horses. I feel like that's when sometimes people think I had my horses with me. I didn't. It was just me in the truck and I overcorrected. I looked down at my map and I overcorrected, which resulted in my truck rolling. I was ejected. I hit a fence post and broke my back, which is what injured my spinal cord. So I'm a T11, T12 spinal cord injury. So I can't feel from the waist down. I mean, I have regained a little bit as we've gone, but not enough to do anything with, you know, I appreciate everything I have. I feel like I should say that better. But so I was spinal cord injury and had to figure out how to live life again, both on and off of a horse.
Just, I mean, obviously, I've seen the movie about your life and I'm guessing because you were one of the producers on that and I'm guessing you had a lot. So I'm guessing it was very truthful in how it was depicted, but nothing can kind of be like the actual truth. And how, I suppose, in that moment in time, I've got a couple of friends who've also actually from horse accidents have had that moment of realization. And all of them have said the first thing they thought about was, am I going to ride again? Where were you at when you got that news? Was that the same for you? And I mean, just can you even put into words a moment of being told that news or how it was for you? Is it something you can even vocalize?
Yeah, so I didn't get knocked out during my accident. So I was sitting on the side of the road waiting for somebody to find me and did like a self-evaluation and realized that I couldn't feel anything from the waist down. And I mean, at that point, you know, I'm looking at everything that has flown out of my truck. My truck rolled 7 times at 75 miles an hour. And I'm just wondering, like, what do I do now? And it's everything. It's how I was serving a state FFA president. So I was serving in a leadership position. I'm like, how do I do that? How do I ride my horses? How do I even get out of this? Right? Like, what do I even do now? And that is a lot of the process. And in the first conversation I had with the doctor was, I ride horses. So when do I do that again? And they said, you don't do that. Like, that's, especially what you do, that's impossible. Maybe get on a horse, sure, but barrel race, that's not going to happen. And I didn't ever take that to heart. That was not something that even was, That wasn't an option for me. It still isn't an option for me, even with the things like challenges I've had since then with horses falling or saddle sores that turn into pressure sores. I've had to go through a lot of things, and it's not, you know, if I'm going to get back on a horse, it's what do we need to do it? You know, what do I need to do in order to be back there? And I felt like that was how it was from day one. It's not if I'm getting back on a horse. What do I need to do to get back on a horse?
How old were you when you had the accident?
18. I turned 19 in the hospital, actually.
That's just an insane. Do you think that's the horse? I mean, I often might, again, talking about my poor husband, he's long suffering. We talk about him a lot on podcasts.
Oh, Gregor.
I am. If he takes a wrong turning, forgets the kids' lunch or forgets water or something, I lose my mind, Amberly. I am like a woman possessed. I cannot control my shit. Yeah, our house nearly burnt down, and I'm like, right, let's get this out of the house. Let's calm. Or a horse can gallop over someone and they're flat out unconscious. And I'm like, right, this is what we do. And like, and if a horse comes in with his leg hanging off, I'm like Captain Sensible. I'm like amazing in a crisis, terrible when something like tiny goes wrong. Do you think that's the horse person in you? Were you like that? Did you just sit and assess?
My sister, my littlest sister, she's the only one that rides with me. And she says it. She'll say, did you go Amberly mode? Like, that's what she'll say. Because anytime something bad happens, anytime there's a wreck, anytime I'm just like, all right, let's handle this. What do we need to do now? Tell me your pain on a scale from 1 to 10. Can you talk to me? Like, it's all the, and so she just says, you just went Amberly mode. Like, that's just what she calls it. But yeah, on a day-to-day basis, am I a little bit like a chicken with my head cut off? Yeah. Yeah, that's me. But when it comes to like, yeah, same thing. Like when you're saying that, I'm like, yep, that's how I process life.
The American version of me, finally. Yes.
So how long from I'm just trying to get my head around this. So you had the accident at 18, you turned 19 in hospital. Did you manage to get back on a horse before you were 20?
I was back on a horse 4 months later.
You a machine.
Yeah, 4 months later. Would have liked to have been sooner than that, but I still had my back brace on. I still had my turtle shell on. And that was when I could finally convince my mother and doctors to just let me get on. It took me 18 months to get back to competing from my accident. And that I wish was faster, but I did take a 9-month break where I did quit for a minute because I was so frustrated that it wasn't the same. And I felt like I needed to take a step back and like decide what was I okay with. And figure out how to just live life in a chair and then I could come back to the horses. So yeah, it was 4 months that I first got back on. It was 18 months that I competed for the first time.
When you had your accident, you had the horse Power, who, am I right in saying that he's actually in the film? That's him in the film.
He is. So Power's in the movie, plus they dyed 3 horses' hair black to be his stunt doubles through some of the scenes as well.
Your horse is so famous, he has stunt doubles. I love that. Was he the first horse that you got back on? I always find that very interesting because a lot of the time when I've had friends who've had serious accidents or brain injuries and they've just gone, I just need to know I can do it. I just need to sit in the saddle. And they've gone, I want to sit on this horse. And people have gone, no, let's sit you on like Daisy the cob that won't move. But there's a mentalness about getting on one horse. What was Power that one?
I was getting that. So Power is a barrel horse and he is a little hot and he is a little frantic. He can be. And so I did get on my rope horse. So luckily I didn't have to get on someone else's horse, but I did get on my rope horse for the first day, but then I was on Power after that.
So what did you change first? Like, I have so many questions. Like, did you modify your saddle? Is that a thing that exists already, or did you have to design that?
No, we designed that. So we added the seat belt. So that was the first piece that we added. I have Velcro straps around my legs and my fenders. My feet are rubber banded in. I have a nylon strap that buckles across my left hip. And then I do sit on I sit on like a honeycomb seat now. I did sit on a seat of air, like my wheelchair seat, for about 10 years. And then I just changed that. But those were all trial and error. Those were like, okay, this worked. Now what do I do about this? This works. Now what do I do about that? And so we went through that process.
And can you feel the saddle underneath you, or do you have no feeling at all there? Sorry, that's probably quite but it's like, I can't imagine not like that, like your balance.
Right. So that is what's hard, is my balance. I can feel, so I now can feel to my knees in most places. I have regained that since my accident. And I have the inside muscle on both of my thighs that has come back, which I don't think is any question of that's because that's what you use when you're on a horse. So I've regained some of those. But really, when I get on, I try to forget about what my legs are doing because I can't get them to do what I want them to do in the part of benefiting, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not going to be able to cue my horse with them. So I try to strap everything as secure as I can have it. My legs still are flaccid, and so they'll still move. We did try to tie my stirrups to like my cinch rings, but we realized that movement from the horse has to go somewhere. And if I don't, if I don't let my legs take it, it went straight to my back. And so, and so that was bad. So my legs are flaccid and they do move. My horses just know to ignore them, and it's worked. It's worked.
Yeah. This is one of the things I teach, Ben. When I'm teaching, I say, I can't remember which one of Newton's laws of physics is energy cannot disappear. It has to be changed into something.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, I've got to sit still on the horse. I'm like, no, because you have to move with the horse and absorb the horse's energy. Your movement is the energy transfer. So that like makes me feel like I'm not actually talking utter shit when I'm teaching. But no. It's like, yeah.
If you try to tie your legs to your saddle, it's going to feel freaking weird because it had to go somewhere. Like you can't just die. And so it would move to my back and then that didn't feel good at all. So my legs are, they do flap, I guess you could say. They kind of look like they're kicking, truly. Most people who don't know my story don't even know that I'm paralyzed because they just move like they're anybody else in the run.
So just going to take a quick pause in this podcast to give a huge shout out to Equestrian Bands, our wonderful advertisers. We've spoken about them so much before. By now, you should know how amazing these game-changeable, wearable therapy bands for horses and for humans, by the way, because I've been wearing one, that help improve circulation, recovery, overall performance. They're non-invasive. You can stick them on your horses. You can get collars for your dogs. I love them. Simon, you are loving the bands, right?
Yeah, no, loving the bands. I've got an older horse that is competing and he has had an injury in the past and I've put the bands on and it just makes a massive difference to him. The leg feels so much better as a result of having the bands on, genuinely. And so I think they are making a really big difference to him, which is fantastic.
Ben's smiling. Ben's like, I want to talk now. I want to talk. I want to tell you about how much I love the bands. I love them.
Yeah, if it stands still on my yard now, it's got bands on. I've gone bands crazy. On everything. So I started with one pair and then I've just gone crazy. I've got them on my rehab horse, on my horse Mojo. Anyone who follows me on socials know Mojo has been out and had surgery, and literally within 2 or 3 days of having the bands on, swelling's gone down in the leg as he's healing. He's, you know, sounder and fitter and again well in himself. I am a full convert. I've even, like you were saying, Jenny, on humans, that even on my wife as she's healing from her C-section. So yeah, they're if it stands still in our home now, it's got streams on.
Well, because we love our wonderful listeners as well, we got the team at Extremes to give us a discount code so you guys can enjoy them as well. So make sure you go and check them out and put SHUTUP10 in the offer bit at the checkout. But honestly, we love them and I'm sure you guys will too.
I have so many questions. Like, you're seatbelted into the saddle. Like, that's a wreck waiting to happen as well, isn't it? Has it happened?
Yeah, I've had Legacy fall and I broke my leg. It broke my femur when he fell on it. I had a horse I was training for somebody run me into a barrel and shattered my kneecap. I had a horse.
Can I ask? I'm sorry if this is an insensitive or inappropriate question, but does not having sensation from the waist down mean that breaking your femur or knee hurts less when that happens now?
So that's what was kind of crazy. Yeah, no, it doesn't. Like, I have sensation to my knees, but not technically all the pain receptors. So when I broke my kneecap, so what happens if I have an injury that's like a really serious injury, that something I can't feel, it actually makes me have a headache and be nauseous. That's like how your body functions. Again, it's like it has to go somewhere. So when I broke my kneecap, by the end of the run, my head was horrendous. But I did wait 4 days before I went to the ER to go get it looked at because I didn't know that it was broken. So that one was kind of a tricky one. My femur, yes, my femur, because it poked out and came back in. So we knew that something was bad. That one didn't give me a headache, though, because I went into shock so fast. So I tried to convince my mom to let me get back on and rope my calf before I went to the hospital. And she had told me, she was like, if you can get it to stop bleeding, I'll let you do it. And we tried everything. I like did a tourniquet. I did a maxi pad. I did vet wrap. I did everything I could do to get that leg to stop bleeding. And I couldn't get it to stop bleeding, which ended up being a broken femur. So I'm probably glad I didn't get back on.
Can I just say that is such a horse person's attitude to fixing stuff. Maxi pad and vet wrap fucking fixes everything.
If it didn't fix it, then what are we even doing?
Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't try a bit of electrical tape on there as well. That's it. Just hold it all in place.
I should have done that. Tried to really tourniquet it right there. Can't bleed through electrical tape.
Oh my God. If I couldn't like you anymore. And then when you were back in the saddle, when you've thought you can do this again, when was the first kind of canter loping, and like when you actually went at any decent speed, how, first of all, terrifying was that to thrilling? Like, because how much control did you have? Like, how was that moment?
Well, so it was definitely all the processes of like the seat belts that I had balance, because I think that was what was so frustrating, is that I felt like the place that I'd had the most balance in my whole life, all of a sudden I had none. So,
yeah.
I mean, why it even took me so long to get back to where is because like I had to like get on and then be frustrated and then mentally work through that frustration and then look for the solution. Like I almost had to like grieve every time it didn't work. So we got the seatbelt and then we did the leg straps and then I was able to lope or canter, depending on who you are and what you say.
Yeah.
I mean, that was within the first couple times of getting on that I tried that. That I was able to do that. I will say when it felt right, I mean, I could lope okay before I took the 9 months off. So it was like in August or early September that I just decided this just isn't what I wanted. I told my mom to sell my horses. I was like, if I can't train them like I used to, I'm not going to have them. Obviously, I didn't really mean that. So I'm glad she didn't obviously take that seriously. But I did take 9 months, like 9 months that I took away from them and didn't go out and see them and do anything with them. But when I got back on after that 9 months, it was game on. It was, I was emotionally, mentally, spiritually, physically in a different place in this situation that I realized that even though it wasn't the same, the love for it definitely hadn't changed. And I would say the appreciation for it even grew. So then it was good. And so the very first time that I loped through, like I cruised through a barrel pattern, was on a Saturday when I finally got all the pieces put together and I entered on Monday. So the second I had it where it was worked out, I was entering 2 days later.
Do you mind me asking how, so for my friends and I, I've worked with a lot of the para dressage riders at the Paralympics, and the riders who don't have any sensation have normally a schooling whip in each hand, and that's how in their category they're allowed to do it. How do you communicate, especially with a horse like Power, for example, who's been trained by you in with your legs and your seat? How do you now communicate with them? What's the method?
Well, so Power is a unique story. I'd actually gone to a clinic in the fall before my accident, and the clinician told us that we should be able to do everything with our horse with our hands that we do with our legs. And I remember telling her, I don't need to do that. And she was like, no, like if your horse can't do everything with your hands that you can do with your legs, that's your lack as a trainer. So I retrained him, not knowing I retrained him for myself. So he was actually pretty easy because I had literally trained him to do everything with my hands. He just had to have learned to ignore my legs. The ones after him have been a little bit of a challenge because we have to figure out how to get to that spot. And I do everything with my hands, my voice. I can carry a dressage whip to be able to tap them on like rib cages where my legs would need to be. So I utilize that as well. But yeah, I mean, it's been a little trial and error. I realize every horse is not meant for me. Some of them take advantage for sure. And some of them really step up and be better. So I've learned that it's okay that not every horse is for me either.
It's all right. Because... I've had many a horse take the piss out of me, Amberly, and yeah. So I don't think it's. I think some horses just are like that. They can tell when you have a weakness. Like,
yeah. And they take advantage. So I just don't want those ones.
Yeah.
I was speaking to a friend. I've spoken to a friend of mine, Lee Pearson, who's a para dressage rider, before about this. Because the first time I saw one of his horses in person, I was like, Lee, this horse is really, really hot. Like, no offense, but I didn't think you'd have a really hot horse. And he was like, Ben, my legs don't work. I can't kick. Of course, I have a horse that's hot because I can't push it forwards all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like that. You prefer, because the reason I bring that up is because I think people would think that after everything you've gone through, you'd be like, I need a safe horse. But actually you're like, no, I can control it, but I need that power to be offered by the horse.
They have to have enough fire in themselves that I don't have to ask for that part.
Yeah.
But that's where you're like extraordinary, because after what you've been through, most people would be like, do you know what? I want a horse I can sit on and do my makeup on, not one that's going to try and go off at 1,000 miles an hour. Thank you very much. Like you, the fact that you can harness that energy is just extraordinary.
That she wants to be seatbelt locked in into a saddle bronc and sent off. Let's go. Woo! It'd be fine. I'm so impressed. I honestly think you are one of the coolest people I have ever met. This is just absolutely, I can't even speak. My mind is blown.
I just, and also, so tack wise, you've had to modify your tack. Now, I know in the dressage world, if you do anything to any bit of tack, people are like, oh, you can't do that. You can't do this. There's rules and regulations about what you can and can't do. What has the barrel and the rodeo world been like at you modifying tack? Have some of them gone, no, you can't do that? Or has everyone been very welcoming? Like, how have they responded to you and your amazing comeback?
They've all mostly very supportive. I have had a few funny comments where people, and they say it, I still to be nice, but I do laugh when they say, you know, we were so excited when you came back. We didn't expect you to beat us though. So there was definitely a couple that were like, okay, we thought we would just get to like cheer you on. We didn't think that you could actually outrun us, which I'm like, I am not here to be a participant. I am here to be a competitor, and that will not change. But really, like, very supportive. I always have somebody cheering. It doesn't matter if it's a tiny jackpot or a big giant race. Like, I have people that are cheering and supportive, so I can't even really complain about that.
We've already had you for an hour, and I know you're a very busy human. So I have to start talking about this, and then if we have time for other stuff, amazing. But then Yellowstone. I mean... Yellowstone. It is the biggest show on the fucking planet. It is just, I even tried today to do a bit of eye makeup like Beth, like obsessed. And that is about the maximum of my knowledge of kind of rodeo and everything. That's where I've learned anything I know about it from. How did that come about? Who approached you? How was it? Tell me everything.
Yeah, which I do have to tell you, I do have another appointment, and I'm telling him I'm waiting. It was at 1. So I'm like, I told him,
I'm so
I have to just wait a little bit. I thought we'd have a lot with an hour. We might have to do a take 2. We might have to do a part series, which we can do that. But Yellowstone. So Yellowstone was cool. I got on that because Jake Ream, who's actually one of the guys in the bunkhouse, I've been friends with him, family friends with him for a lot of years. Even when my movie was getting filmed, he's a cutting trainer with cutting horses. And he also provides a lot of the horses for Yellowstone. Taylor Sheridan was one of his clients early on. And so that's how they became friends. So it was like just kind of through connections that Taylor Sheridan told Jake he was looking for an inspiring story. And Jake was like, you already know one. Remember Amberly? And so then Taylor wrote me in the script, which is funny that's, I mean, I only knew because Jake gave me a heads up. Otherwise, I just received an email of, hey, you've been written into the script of Yellowstone. We need you to show up for filming day. Like, that was kind of the heads up. Luckily, I'd already heard from Jake that he's like, they should be reaching out to you because you are in the script this time. Otherwise, I would not have known that ahead of time prior to that email.
Oh, my God. And was it like... It's just, it was such a cool moment as well, isn't it? It was very much like, especially for me, I was like, that is fucking girl power. That is horsey girls, their fucking nails. Like, you just kind of embodied everything that I feel about women who ride horses and the love of the horses and everything. I just, like, it was just such a cool moment. And then to see, like, their reaction on it. But I don't think it was, like, I'm guessing their reaction to watching you ride as well was almost kind of a genuine, like, holy shitballs, she's pretty cool.
It is. It usually is. If people have not ever seen me ride before and then they see me run or compete or even like on that set. Yeah, I think it does take people back, which then it kind of like brings me back to reality too, because I'm like, oh, this is actually kind of cool. But because I don't think like that all the time, like it's just riding for me. It's just being competitive. But there are moments like that where you take a step back and you're like, oh, you know what? I actually think I might be a little badass. So that's cool. Like you just kind of have those moments where it does just like, I don't know, awe moments.
Yeah, like a little kind of Hollywood reality check right there. Like amazing. And was it cool being on set? Like, was it, did you meet any of the other actors? And who did you get to hang out with?
Full fangirling.
Fangirl. Like I literally, like, Amelie's the coolest person I've ever met, Ben.
So
I agree with you on that.
Thank you, Wolf. The only ones that are on set are the ones that are in that actual scene. So I haven't met all the cast yet. I plan on it. So at some point, I'm sure there's going to be some Yellowstone reunion and I'm going to be invited to that, of course. But I was able to meet who was on set. And then I've met a few other cast members through a couple other events after that.
Has it changed, obviously, within your world? Like Ben is very famous within the Liberty world. And I would like to say I'm not famous in slight anyway, but I'm guessing within the barrel racing world, everyone knows you. But has this given you a kind of brought your fame outside of your current world as well?
Yes. I do think that it makes a difference. Like there now are people who will come up to me in the airport who are not in the rodeo world, but will know me from Yellowstone. Yes.
That is insane. Do you have to sign autographs and things? Get selfies?
Usually, yes.
I want Amberly's autograph and a selfie, but not anything to do with Yellowstone, just because she is a bad, proper cowboy up spoonful of concrete in the morning. Yeah.
I am very aware that you have to go, Amberly. So I really would love to talk about all your motivational speaking and everything, but I'm guessing we might have to save that for another podcast.
Yes, I think we're going to have to take two.
But we do have a tradition on this podcast of asking someone what's annoyed them this week. Because you know how everyone these days is really zen and very like, all we like to have a bit of a rant on this podcast. Can I ask you, Ben, when Amberly's gone, I'm going to ask you what yours is and we'll carry on doing a bit of recording. But Amberly, what has annoyed you this week? Is there anything that's really got your goat and you're just like, do you know what? That really annoys me. It doesn't have to be horse related.
Oh, no, I wasn't even thinking horse related at all. Well, I am wedding planning for one. So next time I will be married. So that will be fun. So the wedding planning is annoying in general. But I tell you what, you don't know what the most annoying thing is when I need to get on the plane to go somewhere and I go in the bathroom and there's 25 stalls that are open and the only one taken is the one that I fit in. And it is not someone who knows it. That really? Yes.
I can totally imagine. I feel like that is a whole podcast in itself, like accessibility and all of that. I can, that would piss me off as well.
But that happened. That's why I could answer that right now.
Right. You have to go because you have so many other things to do, but I cannot believe that we've managed to grab you because you are so busy for an hour. I mean, Ben and I, we're going to like carry on chatting after this. We'll stay on. So we'll let you go. Honestly, I cannot tell you how inspiring you are. I'm like, you have got one massive fan in me. I'd love to have you back on the podcast. Thank you so much. And as is tradition, and I'm sure you'll appreciate it, all that's left to say is Amberly, shut up and ride.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So Amberly's had to go, but I'm so starstruck. Not just the Yellowstone thing, but someone who is, I get like, we're going to have our differences. And I think if she came back on, we could have more of that chat about the barrel world versus like, and I know she really wanted to talk about like how she cares for her horses and the horse welfare and how much she loves them, but we didn't even get around to it. I have never seen you, Benjamin, so speechless.
I just think she's one of the coolest people I've ever met in the world. It took me longer to get back on a horse after my stomach surgery than it took her to get back on a horse after a spinal injury. I love the just, like, you can have, like, that proper, and it, your excuse isn't a reason.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what I got from speaking to her. Like, she's just an absolute weapon. She is unstoppable. She is, you know, the boulder coming down the hill. Throw what you like at her. Do you know, I want to barrel race. I want to ride horses. Can't move from the waist down. Cool, let's carry on. Like, broken knee, broken femur, redesigning the tack. Like, all of that, I just find so phenomenal. Do you know, because we'll all have days where it's like, oh, I was meant to school my horse this afternoon, but it's raining, so I'll stay in. And do you know what I mean? And there is a woman who is, you know, that women like that, sod the Kardashians. Why aren't, there should be a statue of a woman like that. Just bloody amazing.
Just unbelievable. And I just, it's her, like you say, if that doesn't work, we'll find a different way. Not it's going to stop me. And I feel like we almost sometimes in this world, like, look for excuses not to do stuff, don't we? Like, being a bit of a martyr.
And
to...
I suspect that that is why she's a phenomenal horse trainer. Because that's the game, isn't it? Like, anything you do with a horse, so many people try, they don't train. They try and do something with a horse, and if it doesn't work out, oh, that horse won't do it. And that mindset of just, we'll do this instead. Alter that, change the tack, change the environment, change the method, move the... Honestly, I am speechless. I know I'm messing up all my words.
I really wanted to know if she could talk to the 18-year-old Amberley who had just had the accident, like, what would she say? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how would she explain how her life is going to go? She's going to keep barrel racing. She's going to be on Yellowstone, but... how would that have comforted 18-year-old her? Or would it have been like, yeah, fuck off, that's not going to happen? Do you know what I mean? Like, it must
I know
have been...
exactly what you mean. And
it must have been so dark.
And now she's a motivational speaker. So which aspects... So she obviously must know that there are things that she learnt on that journey that can help other people. And I'm fascinated to know what they are.
Yeah.
What someone with that mindset would put forward as their top things. We have to have her back on. We have to.
I know, we have to. She's amazing. So how are you, Benji? Now I've got you. Are you well? How's daddyhood? How's life? How's being back out on the grass from all your videos I've been watching?
Yes, it's amazing. Finally back training on grass, which I prefer because my training field is like 220 meters by, I don't know how wide it is, but it's like a massive area to work in, which is wonderful, out of my tiny little outdoor, which my outdoor looks massive, but it's not. It's 40
it's
by
not.
40.
I've been, it's a square, isn't it? Your outdoor. It's not
and
a
so
traditional.
And I think because it's square, it looks bigger. So it's nice to be back on the grass and training there. You know, Wild's just doing incredibly.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm going to do a bit of a name drop because my past is the only thing I have these days. When I rode Vallegro and I rode him out onto to hack him around the fields with Carl, the moment his gorgeous Olympic winning hooves hit the ground, his head was down like a fucking cow eating grass. You have like 10 horses at liberty. How the arsing hell do you stop them from having a snack? How annoying, frustrating is it, and how do you get over it?
Well, it's not. So a lot of the basis of everything that I teach my horses starts with attention.
Yeah.
So the biggest problem people have is people ask horses questions before they've even got the horse's attention, whether they're in the saddle or on the floor. They just throw a question at the horse, but they've not made sure that they're there. And so the big thing for me is starting that from the early stages. So we teach the horse that I can like make a sound or I can flick the whip and they'll like get back to looking at me, getting their ears and their eyes back on me. And then we introduce that on the grass and stuff to make sure that, you know, if I'm going to lose that attention, I can give my signal that's like attention on me and I can get that back. The other side of it is not making them feel like it's not allowed. So,
okay.
So because it, So obviously they get to go out and graze and play in the fields anyway, because, you know, three Fs, freedom, forage and friends. So one, if your horse never gets to graze, then that's something that can make them bad to work on grass. And then the other is I'll work in turning them off and letting them eat the grass within the session.
Okay, right.
So if I squat down or kneel down or sit on the floor in front of them when they're in a line, they know they can eat grass.
Ah.
And then the moment I stand back up again and say, okay, we're going, then they'll come back. And by teaching them that they will be allowed to eat grass, that really helps. And then also then you're starting to work into more of a genuine, real connection of how horses would interact in a field. Because they're going to have downtime and then they're going to, like in a herd, they have to be able to be aware of each other. Because that's the other thing. People will say that horse is eating grass. It's not concentrating on me. Whereas a horse can actually completely be concentrating on you and munching the grass. And you can test that by the moment you say that you just go to walk off or use like, then they're back.
I can eat chocolate and watch Netflix.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But and that so it's a weird one is the and I think people don't try enough really. And I would even say if you've got a horse that gets really stressy when you hack it out and gets hot or like gets destination addiction, you know, tries to rush home and stuff. If you've got hacking where you can get off road, then hack around for a bit and then stop and let them put their head down and let them graze while you're on them for 5 or 10 minutes. And then go and ride a little bit more and then stop and graze. Because if all we do when we get on horses is go, 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 then stopping and going back into relaxation isn't actually in their vocabulary. Yeah. So then, like with my, like Sebastian, my little hot grey, the only way we've got him to be lovely out on hacks and to stop getting, like thinking we're going to go stubbling all the time is because he doesn't know if the next question is going to be canter on or stand and eat this grass verge for 10 minutes.
So he's got to listen in case one or the other happens.
Yeah. Which I know would go against a lot of people like, don't let them eat the grass. But I'm like, it's a horse that eats grass.
It's good that you know that though, that they eat grass. That's quite helpful. I feel How like it's you? A bit like, well, I was just thinking in my head, right, I'm not a big fan of my kids eating sweets. It's more because I look at them. And when your kids' next lot of teeth start coming through, right, it's really freaky. Because they're these tiny little humans, like six when the teeth start coming through and falling out, or five. James was really young. And you're like, oh my God, those are the teeth you're going to have for the rest of your life. Like, I don't know why I'm like, holy shit, we need to look after those. You've got a long fucking time with those teeth. And it's like, oh! And because I think when you've made a human, you're like, oh, I made that. Like, we need to look after that. So that for me is like when they eat sweets, I just see them like, oh my God, your teeth. But I feel like if you don't let kids have sweets or have them on treats, or my kids have to, like, if they've been for a hike, they're allowed a donut and stuff like this, then when they go to the party and you're not around, it's like, holy Jesus, fuck. Like, I want all the sweets in all the world. No one's watching. I'm going to steal sweets or hide sweets. And it's a bit like that. If you never let horses out on grass and then you try and ride on grass, they're going to be like that dickhead horse who's like, I want that. I'm never allowed it.
I feel like I need to flag. Vallegro has spent a lot of time grazing on grass.
Oh, yeah, he has. He was
just
like
really
a giant...
want to flag that hard before someone tries to imply that's what we're saying.
No, I'm just a shit rider and he's like a Thelwell pony. You know, one of those caricatures where he can put his head down and I have... he knew I deserved no respect. Like Amberley was saying, how some horses know what they can get away with. Yeah, it was just like, no, that's not happening. So, yeah.
I massively agree with you, though, on all of that with... if you keep them bound in all the time, doesn't matter whether it's you never let that horse canter or you never, do you know, if people don't do things, don't avoid the stuff. The stuff you avoid is probably what you need to work on if we're linking that back to horses.
Yeah, absolutely. Just stuff builds up in you, doesn't it? I always think as well, when I lunge my horses and they have a good buck and a fart and everything, and I'm like, oh yeah, you go for it. Like at the beginning, you know, they're always a bit wild and I'm like, oh, you do it. Because I'm just so wholly grateful they don't do it when I'm on them. Yeah. I'm like, you just let any anger you've got about me, you let it out. You go for it, honey. If I've annoyed you, you let it out while you're on the lunge. Because if you're doing it then, you're not doing it when I'm on. And I'm grateful for that.
Rather not be piloting that adventure. Thank you very much.
Yes, exactly. Right. What has annoyed you this week, Benjamin?
What has annoyed me this week is that we just bought a couple of new Frisians that are very, very nice.
Have you not got enough horses?
We've got a lot of work on
this. We've got a lot of work.
My father has acquired 5 new horses in the last couple of weeks. I want people to know we're not like baller. My dad goes out and finds horses and he's like, I've paid a fiver for it. And I gave him a packet of cheese and onion Walker's crisps. Here's a polo pony. Like that. You've met my dad. You know what he's like.
Yeah.
But we got these 2 new Frisians. They are stunning. They are.
Oh, share us some photos.
I will have to show you some photos. They are stunning. And because they've always lived together, they're going out in the field during the day. And on a night, they come into like what I would call a big loose box, like not a stable, but almost like a big corral in a barn.
Yeah.
And one of them has been itching its bum and snapped the stable door that was on the barn in there, which meant that me and one of my best mates, Mr. James Parrott, had to spend, well, mainly James Parrott. I'm not very good with power tools, but I had to spend a day completely rebuilding that sort of area. And you know, when you're like, you're our new sexy flash grown-up horses, and now I can't play with you because I've got to spend time fixing a door. So annoyed is a strong word, but you know when you're like...
Frustrated.
I had a full day this morning without waking up to find out that you had done that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, brilliant. Because even though James is my best friend, he's still, when I'm like, do you want to come and spend a full day concreting telegraph poles into the ground at the farm and stuff? He's like, yeah, cool. You can pay me. I love you. So that was, yeah, that's that, really. But to be honest, there's not a lot to be annoyed about in life at the moment. I'm pretty
happy. That's because the sun's shining, isn't it?
The sun's shining. I've got my beautiful baby, my beautiful wife, my beautiful horses. I'm very chummy, to be honest, at the moment. What's annoying you? Don't say me.
Yes, you, because you never fucking reply to any messages, but that's standard. Some days it does get me very down. I'm like, I just need a response.
It's not you, it's everyone.
I know, but I take it personally because I'm hard work. But we may have annoyed people.
Oh.
Yeah. Again. We've had our first like social media people ranting at us. Three or four comments that weren't, aren't you guys wonderful?
I thought we'd had worse than that already.
No, we've never had any. So I was new to
it. I thought you went on that website.
That wasn't on our social media. That was on that hideous website where people rant about famous people. And they're normally just slagging me off, not you. And never Simon. Of course, never Simon. So I was trying to ring you because I needed someone to calm me down. And I rang Simon and he stopped me because I'm quite flippant in my responses. And I wanted to write quite a jokey response. And then
I think I know what this is now.
These people may not have actually listened to the podcast, so they won't find me funny. So when we jumped on the fucking bandwagon. I'm not going to lie. We jumped on the AI generative toy bandwagon and I posted.
I saw the people with their angry, like, you shouldn't use AI. And I felt like I'm in the same boat as you, I think. Because I wanted to message them back saying, well, we didn't make our Shut Up and Ride logo and stuff by using AI. We're just doing this trend.
So we just got quite a lot of shit for it. Like, don't use AI, it's bad for the environment. And one really long rant. And I just wanted to reply in the comments. So I guess we know what's annoyed you this week.
Oh! Why didn't you?
Oh, because
Why
I don't...
didn't you?
Because all of our listeners would have gone, yeah, that's funny.
Oh.
But if they are one of your followers because it was on your grid and haven't actually listened to the podcast...
I don't care.
They're not going to find it funny. And so
You should have said. And what annoys me about this as well is, number one, except AI's here, it's going to get used for stuff.
Yeah.
Like, get used to that. I hate that people... AI makes me a bit nervous. I've seen, like, Terminator and all of that.
Don't think we're... Are you worried that doll of you is going to come alive and steal your job?
But what I think AI is brilliant in things of like, oh, it can scan algorithms and like find disease patterns and stuff. Like, it's all great. And I get that people get angry about the artwork, But then,
but it wasn't artwork. I was on ChatGTP, so I wasn't on AI artwork. Secondly, that to me is not artwork. It's a fake doll. Thirdly, if we were going to be famous enough to have dolls of us made, I'm not averse to that, by the way. I think that'd be quite cool, a little mini version of me, but I'm never going to be that famous. I think it'd be more likely to be of you. We wouldn't employ AI to do it because didn't, apart from you, it didn't look like any of us.
I looked really ill in the group photo.
You looked amazing in the one with your top off, but the person who we would definitely not be allowing us to use ChatGTP to make our models would be Simon. Because let's face it, Simon looked, some people were like, he looks like Andrew Nicholson. A couple of people were like, he looks like Austin O'Connor, which as Austin admitted, he has been kicked in the face a few times. So yeah, I think don't worry people. If we actually wanted to make dolls of ourselves, A, it would give people jobs. We'd maybe use AI to suggest what it could look like. But I think you would have to employ an actual person to really get the finite details of
Jenny,
someone's face.
Jenny, don't back down. We at Shut Up and Ride support AI. Down with the unions. Let's let it burn. Just let the world burn. Who cares? We don't make art. Sodom. No, but I mean, people, honestly, I think sometimes people just want to be, it's trendy to be angry at it, isn't it? And I think that's when people, when I get annoyed, because I'm like, are you actually annoyed? Or is this just something to be, the cool thing, the trendy thing to be angry
at?
Well,
it was all young people as well, Benji. So I looked, because obviously I was like, oh, who are these people that hate us? We have haters, eh? So I think if you've got haters, you're doing something right in some ways.
Yeah, you're building engagement, which is good.
Exactly. So I went on their profiles and all of them were like 18 or 19. So I was like, oh, quickly get off their profiles.
They were artists as well.
Yes.
Which, to be fair enough, like, I get it if you're an artist and you're worried. I get stuff like that. But it, you know, it affects us in our world. Like, even like, you know, less horses on films and stuff these days because they can do them with computers more easily and all of that sort of thing. I get it, but this is the world we're in. Like,
yeah,
figure
and it was
out.
A bit of fun. It was a bit of fun. At no point are we getting dolls made.
And I didn't see anybody else get the grief we got. I saw so many famous riders and stuff doing the same thing, and no one got the grief we got.
I know. I went onto Burley's webpage because they'd done it. Not a single negative comment. I think, again, like, I was looking at the dynamic of our social media. And your social media is quite different, isn't it? Like, obviously they're your Instagram followers. You appeal to such a vast range of people. And like, you even posted about our hat the other day and no one wrote in the comments, yet you posted the same thing on Facebook and millions of people commented. It does just show that
Facebook's the place to be.
Yes, well, we are on Facebook. And while I'm thinking about this, I'm not very good at this, so I have to do it because I feel like it annoys me when people ask for stuff. But I need people to follow and like and share our podcast because genuinely we need this to do well and continue, and it will only happen if this podcast gets bigger.
And because if it keeps getting bigger, we can have more amazing guests on, like Amberlee, who we just had.
I know, right? And I would love, my dream with this podcast would be to get to a stage where we can lay on nights for free, like demos for free, and we can have a company like Equistreams, our amazing advertiser at the moment, who also, that's how we got to know Amberlee, because Equistream bands, she uses them on her horses. Yeah. A company like that be able to go, right, don't give us the money, let's put 100 bands on RSPCA horses. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would love for this podcast to get that big, that we could do stuff with deals and support people and share. I don't think, like, I think every horse has the right to have an owner who knows what they're doing. So if we can help people understand and learn, and also spreading your liberty training more, because I think what you do is amazing. And I think so many people could take a step back from their conventional way of riding and learn so much from reading horses and understanding them. And if we could do some of that and help educate people. But sadly, we have to pay bills before we do that.
And as much, one thing I love about Shut Up and Ride is just sort of the equestrian world isn't all as serious as it always looks as well.
Yes.
You know, like, and that's a big thing. Like, just remember horses are fun. Gather all the knowledge, do it all. But that's my thing that makes me most proud to be a part of this, is that it reminds people to have fun and to laugh and not take themselves seriously. And like when we ask like these like famous riders and trainers and stuff, you know, like what's annoyed you this week or what's your equestrian ick and all of those like little silly bits that we do for fun. But then I think sometimes they're the most relatable out of all of it as well. You're like, oh, like, you know, that top rider that's won medals feels the same about filling hang nets that I do.
Yes,
and it's
exactly.
We're all actually in the same boat.
Yeah.
So yeah, everybody, like, follow, share, subscribe, spam people with it. Don't shut up and ride. Talk about us a lot and ride.
And I think next time we're going to record just us three, and I'd love to read out people's emails and things like that. So you can email us at shutupandridepodcast@gmail.com. But that is in the description, all of that, and how to follow us on Instagram and everything is in the description on this podcast.
Send us some questions.
Yes,
come on, you
it.
People who listen to us, throw us some questions. Throw some questions either to me, Jenny, or Simon, or to the three of us about stuff. Let's try and get some questions for us for when we next record. That would be cool.
Yes, and lots of people loved the we're trying to get slut into a horse's name. Send us any funny horse names. I quite like that as well. Anyone who's got good funny horse names, I appreciate that. Right, you have a baby to look after. I have work to do. My face hurts from gawping at the screen, listening to Amberlee in like total awe and amazement.
She's
hope people listen.
Genuinely
to this.
Inspirational. Like, I know you and I will have both been in situations working at events where you have to call someone inspirational because it's what you've been told to say.
When I interview you, yeah. Oh,
yeah,
you're so
absolutely.
Inspirational, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she genuinely, I'm gobsmacked.
She's girl power.
And I knew her story before we talked to her, and it still has floored me.
Yeah. Just, and her show on Netflix, I think it's called Walk, Ride, Rodeo.
Walk, Ride, Rodeo.
Yeah, put that in. That's a story. It's not a documentary. It's actual. Who has a net? We've had someone on the podcast that's had a Netflix film made about their life.
It's a dramatized version of events. And yes. Fun fact to finish off the pod, there's the that when you watch Walk, Ride, Rodeo, obviously there's an actress who plays Amberlee in the thing. But when you see her barrel racing before her accident, that is Amberlee's little sister. And when you see her barrel racing post-accident, that is actually Amberlee.
Pretty cool. That is very
cool.
She is just really cool. I'd like to be that cool, but I think my cool days are well behind me.
I think your cool days have just started. Look at that hoodie. Oh,
I know. Look at this Shut Up and Ride hoodie. So many people want one. I think we need to make them. You've got one coming. What colour do you think I got you?
Pink.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Love a bit pink.
I can't wait to see you in it. You have to share some photos. I'm so excited.
I absolutely will.
And then get George to try it on, and we'll have to get some for her as well, see what size
absolutely.
She wants.
Absolutely. We will.
Right. Love you. Thank you for replying to the messages and coming on. All that is left to say is I know how busy you are. Shut up and stand on horses. Is that what'd be the best thing that defies you?
Just shut up. That's what most people just want to say to me. Just shut up.
We've missed Simi. We miss you, Simi. Simi will be back. I cannot
wait.
Wait,
I can make it feel like Simon's here. Wait, one second.
Oh, God,
I'm really tired. And I've taken too much on. I've said yes to everything.
Poor Simi.
We love you, Simi.
We do. We miss you. Right. Ben, shut up and ride.
Shut up and ride. Ride.